Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We're live today. We're taking your calls. It's 410-662-8780. You can email us, foremanwolf@wipr.org. And no surprise to anyone, we want to talk about holiday entertaining.
Mm-hmm. It's my favorite time of the year, Tony. I love this time of the year. It's so much fun.
No, you're not saying
You know how much I love this time of the year. I cannot wait to start making cookies. So I'm kind of curious what everybody's favorite cookie recipes are. Yeah, I would love to hear some really great ideas for cookies.
Yeah, we hear from callers with a few like top secret cookie recipes. It'd
top
be great.
Secret.
Mm-hmm. If you have tips for the magical party dip that makes your holiday party always the fantastic event.
Do you actually make your own eggnog, like my mom, which is really, really good?
From scratch,
whipping the
egg whites.
Delish.
And
yep.
So what is your favorite thing that you can't get anymore that used to be served at the holidays?
What do you mean? A product that we can't get anymore or a dish that
Do you have a particular memory? I mean, and you can tell us yours. It's 410-662-8780.
I think one of the things, when we were growing up, my mom did a different thing often at Christmas. It wasn't always the same, piece of meat or whatever. You know, since my dad was in the meat business, we would often have a whole ribeye, a roasted ribeye for Christmas Day. Sometimes we had turkey. I think when I was a kid, we always had turkey again. I think that was probably pretty traditional in my mom's family.
I was always a little bit annoyed. It was like, oh, turkey again?
Again, right? Just after you'd had it a month ago. Mm-hmm.
Like you guys have nothing original?
Mm-hmm. And my mom always made... And I have to admit that I didn't like them when I was a little girl. My mom always made scalloped oysters on Christmas Eve. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
So to you, what is it, out of curiosity, like up here? Because my mom does make a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch scalloped oyster. So,
well, I think Pennsylvania versus
Baltimore is
a different thing.
Right,
yeah.
So what do you do here?
Here, and callers can say what their versions are.
I would love to hear if somebody scalloped local.
The standard, I mean, it's really just an oyster with a nappe of a cream sauce.
Okay, all right.
And a little bit of breadcrumb.
So done to order?
That you put in the broiler. And
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom used to do a big casserole dish, like a tall casserole, and she would do milk, a little bit of onion, potato, oysters, and then she would crumble oyster crackers. Because I remember when we used to travel from North Carolina, where we lived when I was a child, to York, she would always, always, always buy oyster crackers. I remember there were certain things my mom used to always buy on those trips because she just, back then, they just couldn't get them down in North Carolina.
Well, I mean, there's some things I won't eat in any other part of the country,
mm-hmm.
like potato chips. I mean, that's...
well, that's definitely one of the things we used to bring back. Yeah. That's for sure. And the pretzels, those famous pretzel companies. Oh, my gosh. Pretzels and potato chips and Fosnox and... what are they called? You have them here, the butterscotch ones, and then they make chocolate ones. Don't look at me like that. Tasty cakes. Tasty cakes. We always brought those back. My mom always brought back canned black cherries. I forget now what she used to do with them, but all this stuff, you know, wasn't available
down
there.
Canned black cherries seemed like the kind of thing that I would sneak into my grandmother's cupboard when everyone was asleep in her house.
Mm-hmm.
And just remove like half of them, put the top back on, and put them back in the closet.
They were really good.
And behave as though I had no idea what had happened.
And it's possible that I don't remember.
At 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, now that you put it that way, it's possible that I don't remember what my mother used to do with them because perhaps she used to eat them all. My mother definitely had things hidden. Like she would keep Milano cookies hidden in the cupboard. And they were supposedly for guests when they came over, like emergency cookies for guests. But I know she used to eat them.
So, but let's get down to some of the...
Mm-hmm.
Some real
tips. Information.
Yeah, real information. and you can reach us with your secret holiday entertaining recipes. What I was thinking about were open houses.
Mm-hmm.
And what is a way to make an open house for the holidays successful?
Mm-hmm. if you don't have anyone helping you with the service aspect of it, I think it's extremely hard. So then you have to be very, very smart and efficient if you have no assistance.
I mean, you have to pick your, like, choose your menu intelligently,
mm-hmm.
so that you're not running around doing 14 things at once,
mm-hmm.
and limit your menu, limit your beverages, be very strategic about it, and do it as well as you can. But I think sometimes people try to do, they'll try to do 14 items when they could have done four and made everybody happy.
So what beverages, how do you like to handle beverage service? What's the easiest way to handle it? And what would you serve?
For me, I mean, sparkling wine, whether it's champagne or whatever else. Maybe one sort of cocktail, one nice non-alcoholic something.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just
of course,
mineral water with a garnish or something.
Sure.
You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make something like, and that cocktail could be the eggnog you were talking about, or hot buttered rum, or any number, you know, or some particular fancy cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you garnish a cocktail with pomegranates, everyone's going to think it's holiday time. So.
Definitely. I know we were working on a, because I make cranberry relish right now for the foie gras on the menu. And actually, it's on the magre too. And we were thinking about pureeing some of that and making a cocktail with it. And I think they're adding gin to it. And I like that because gin is made from juniper berries, right? So
well, it's super aromatic. That's kind of a fun.
Yeah. And actually, I tasted it. And that flavor of the juniper berry with the cranberry is gorgeous together. I love that. And I think they were just really taking what we had made and pureed it and strained it and added, you know, whatever else. Oh, egg whites. They put egg whites in there. Do they shake that? How do they do that egg white thing?
So they would shake that.
Mm-hmm.
So then you would get a nice pink frothy cocktail.
My God. It was so pretty. And they did it perfectly because it just stayed that way. And so it just sort of, at first you see it falling. It's really pretty. One of the things I always liked that you did was when, you know, you're talking about passing champagne or whatever. I like the fact that you would just, at a party, pass already, you know, in glasses, not, you know, someone doesn't have to go up and help themselves, but that you're actually passing something and it's the power of suggestion. Here is, you know, your drink without alcohol. Here's your glass of champagne.
The things you got to figure out besides who's there and where do I put my coat, you know, that is how do I get something to drink and how do I get something to eat, right?
Right.
If you got those four things figured out,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have a good time at the party. Or you used to have a shot at having a good time at a party.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a great mystery, but my mom makes a punch that we now, as adults, add vodka to. But when I was a kid, obviously, it was just lemon juice.
You take your childhood Christmas punch
here comes
and
Tony.
Just put vodka in it? Does your mother know this?
No. Lemon juice? No, we slip it in there when she's
I
not
knew
looking.
It.
Mom
Does
wouldn't
she
appreciate
drink it?
That. No. No, we don't put it in hers.
All right.
Come on. So it's cranberry juice, Sprite, and it's probably every family makes it for all I know, and lemonade, and we put cherry juice in, and then, of course, maraschino cherries in the bottom.
Oh, I tasted this stuff once. Oh,
I know
God.
You hate it. But we love it, so we, you know, continue to make it even after you hated it. And so that's fun, but, like, I like the whole idea
like
of doing it with fresh cranberries.
It's like a vodka and 7-Up
kind of thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's good. And then, so... That's what I like about an open house is, you know, you have this at least one thing that's just sitting there. Although the thing I don't like about punch is it's sticky. And if people get it everywhere,
your
that would make me crazy.
Punch is the stickiest. Are you kidding?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what
that's
I mean.
Just all
is
sugar.
That I don't want it everywhere. But you can have that out. So that's fun.
So we've got one email. If you're going away for the holidays, this is someone who doesn't want to deal with entertaining.
Okay.
Where would you go?
Ooh.
Ginny in Clarksville.
Oh, I know exactly where I would go.
So where would you go?
I would go to Paris. Paris is so
I'm so shocked.
Beautiful this time of the year. Or I would go. Where would you go? I'm going to think
always,
for a second.
I've always wanted to go to Vienna.
I've
always wanted
pretty.
To go. For, I mean, that's you think
oh,
about
it's
like
gorgeous. I'm sure.
You think about the great. I mean, having been there, in a warm season, I'd like to go back. And I don't like the cold that much. But if the cold is bundled together with lots and lots of really fantastic music, classical music especially, mm-hmm. that time of the year.
Sure.
And lots of availability of great sweets.
Yeah, the best, some of the best in the world.
A little schnapps to warm you up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the schnapps that I'm talking about are like Reisselbauer, the eau de vie, you know, the really aromatic stuff that will straighten you out in a very big hurry.
And I can only imagine Vienna at Christmas time, the decorations and the fact that it would most likely be snowing. I mean, it would be so magical. That would be just amazing. I would really like to go out, just out to the mountains, out to the western part of the United States somewhere, you know, whether it is Jackson Hole or vicinity. It doesn't have to be Jackson, but somewhere near there. And for me, I just want snow at Christmas. So honestly, if I could just go anywhere. So, but, and a suggestion for the, yes.
So I was just thinking that someone could have a themed holiday party based on where they wish they were going for the holidays.
That would be
right?
fun, right?
So if you wish you were going to Wyoming or something, then
you'd wear your cowboy outfit.
Yeah, you would.
And you'd have a big picture of the Grand Tetons on your wall. And what would you eat? I don't know.
Santa flying over the Grand Tetons.
Right. Oh, and elk. You could have elk. You could have a lot of game. It would be fun.
You could make some jerky.
Mm-hmm.
You could serve Rocky Mountain oysters.
No.
Anyway,
by the way, we're live today.
You can be involved and improve on this conversation. 410-662-8780.
Before Tony and I get on this rabbit hole.
Or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. But that's an interesting question.
What would you have had? I almost hate to ask this question when you were growing up. What did you have for Christmas dinner, Tony?
You know, my single favorite thing, the thing that I miss that doesn't happen anymore for the holiday. There were a number of Christmases when my grandmother was alive.
Mm.
When she would leave a filet mignon, like a whole one, at our house.
Oh.
And we'd have that
for
breakfast on Christmas morning.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, with scrambled eggs.
Oh my gosh, how
like
yummy.
Really good. Ooh. Fluffy. I make them scrambled eggs.
Well, that's a good memory.
And she would also drop off a stolen. You know,
that's nice.
A stolen properly.
Good.
You know, that's like Southwest German sweet. It's sort of like, it's not that far from panettone.
Okay.
Just heavier and more studded with dried fruit and that sort of business. And you, as a little kid, think about it. You get a slice of good beef on your plate. You know, you have a big fat piece of the stolen on your plate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
when
you get to mix that stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, that was sweet of her to do that. That's a wonderful gift.
Yeah,
I love
that
the
was
gift
always
of food.
Like you kind of like how quickly can I, you know, especially by the time I was like 11 or 12 years old when I was hungry all the time, how fast can I get through the presents? Let's go to Liz in Chestertown, who has a couple of thoughts. Liz, go ahead.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Tony.
How are you?
Cindy, I love your show.
Thank you.
I have a comment about another place that's not so far as Vienna or Paris that's magical at Christmas time, and that is Quebec City.
Ooh.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Good.
Where I grew up, Cindy, you're almost guaranteed to have snow. And one of the things about Quebec City is that the French Canadians, it's a Roman Catholic area, of course, they celebrate on Christmas Eve after Mass. The families stay up all night and they have their presents. But there's a special pie, a meat pie, that is traditionally eaten on Christmas and New Year's Eve. It's called tourtière. And it's made with ground pork and spices like cloves and allspice and spices like that. And it's very fragrant, and it's a delicious pie, and I always try to make one for Christmas.
That
here.
Sounds amazing.
Mm, sounds like a nice improvement on mincemeat pie.
Yeah, I was thinking mincemeat too. Almost similar, would you say, or no?
Well, I'm British by birth, so my mincemeat is meatless. It's the raisins and chopped apples type thing.
Okay.
This is a fairly dry ground meat pie.
Mm-hmm.
When we were kids, we used to call it ketchup pie because we always had lots of ketchup in it. Don't do that anymore.
Yeah, ketchup is a magical substance when you're a kid.
Fatty pastry. Of course, it was traditionally made with lard.
Oh, yeah.
There
awesome.
You go.
Don't do that anymore either.
Mm.
Well, hey, thanks,
but
Liz.
Quebec is magic at Christmas time.
Thank you
That's
so
great,
much.
Great advice.
Beautiful.
Have a great holiday.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas. I love the idea of opening presents Christmas Eve after church. That's amazing.
Let's talk to Laura in Baltimore for a minute. Laura, go ahead.
Hi, Laura.
Hi. I have been just hoping to be able to ask you guys this question pretty much ever since you've come on the air. But now that it's Christmas time, it's the perfect time. My mother passed down a recipe that she's been doing for decades for almond roca, which is the candy part is just pure butter, sugar, and almonds. And most of the time it works out, but not infrequently. as you get towards the end of the kind of boiling process, the butter comes out. It just separates, and it can separate a little bit where you have like a couple of teaspoons coming out, or it can separate to where it's just a disgusting mess. And we'd like to know why this happens and what we can do to keep it from happening.
Tell me your process. I have to know what you're doing first.
Melt the butter,
mm-hmm.
A pound of butter.
Mm-hmm.
When that's melted and kind of getting warm, you add the sugar, 2 cups of sugar. And when that comes to a pretty good, healthy, bubbling boil, you add the almonds. And then you just stir until it gets to be done, which is like a dark amber color with the almonds toasted.
One of the things that happens when you're trying to, you're caramelizing the sugar, right? It's not clear.
Yes.
Yeah. So when you caramelize sugar, if you're, okay, there's a couple things. Your pot has to be perfectly clean. So you can't have any fat, like if you made something in there before and it, I mean, literally it has to be perfectly clean. What will happen is sugar will crystallize, and it doesn't sound like that's your problem. I've never made anything like this, so I'm not exactly sure what's happening, but I do know that when you work with sugar, your pot, so I would wipe out my pot with vinegar, you know, just very lightly. And then one of the things that also happens with sugar, and see, to me, it seems like you would caramelize the sugar first and then add the butter, but if you're following a method, so you must be, you know what you're doing. You can also wash down the sides of the pot with a pastry brush with a little bit of water on it. And if you keep, like if you're swirling a lot, that can cause you a problem. But other than that, I'm not exactly sure why it would separate other than it's just not incorporated correctly.
Are you doing this
like
on
8 times out of 10 it works out?
Okay,
but then the butter will pour out.
Okay, do you whisk the sugar into the butter, or how do you incorporate the sugar into the butter?
Stir it. I haven't tried whisking.
Well, you don't need to. If you've been successful stirring, then you don't need to change that.
It sounds like my guess is that the heat might be the variable.
I think you're probably right. But I don't know if we should turn the heat up or turn the heat down.
I would say turn it. It's probably too hot.
Usually it's probably too hot. Yeah. Usually more patience gives you a better result than something like that.
Yeah, okay. Definitely with sugar.
I will try that. I will try a slower boil.
And what kind of a pan are you? What kind of a pan are you using?
Just a stainless steel, like a Farberware, good sturdy pot that my mom uses actually.
Okay.
But I think it might be the heat because my brothers, we try various methods, and one brother said, "I just put it on low, and I hardly even stir it, and I just let it cook a long time." So, I think that's probably the variable that is the most.
A little more patience, and if you happen to have a heavier bottom pan, that might give you a better result too.
A what kind of pan?
A heavier bottom pan.
A heavier bottom pan.
Yeah,
all right.
A very heavy.
I'll give it
pan.
A whirl.
All right. Good luck. Happy
Thank
holidays.
You. All right.
Bye bye. Bye bye. Listening to Foreman and Wolf live on WYPR. We have Hayden on the line. We have emails coming in. We're talking about holiday entertaining, doing open houses. We want all your secret Christmas cookie recipes and all of that sort of business, and any of your pet holiday stories. All of that and more. Give us a call, 410-662-8780, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we are live today. We're talking about holiday entertaining, specifically open houses, which seems like you're always being invited to someone's open house, right?
Definitely.
So we're going to try to give a few tips, answer a few questions. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And I'm going to sneak in a quick email here. And we'll get to we have a caller there. My wife Rachel and I just enjoyed some homemade eggnog that we've aged for about a month so far, along with some gluten-free Lebkuchen, these delicious little German spiced holiday cookies. Our holiday traditions involve copious amounts of cooking, baking, and of course eating, and we try to experiment and expand our horizons every year. but those cookies are going to become a Christmas mainstay for us. Thanks, Harpy.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it seems like no one is super interested in German food until you get to Christmas time.
That's not true. You know? That's just not true. It is the time of the year for it.
Ooh, and I'm going to slip in a little bit of quick brilliance here from Ronnie in Baltimore. When I host a party, I get tired of constantly giving directions to the bathroom for folks who are at my house for the first time. Is it tacky to put up a little sign marking directions to the bathroom?
I don't think so.
No,
I think it's helpful for your guests, frankly, because then they don't feel like a dum-dum.
Yeah, you know,
oh, where's
smart,
the bathroom?
Or
they're
maybe
scared to ask where the bathroom is. Yeah, that's awesome. I like it. With a big red arrow on it.
I think I may just do that permanently now. Let's go to Hayden in Easton. Hayden, how are you? Thanks for holding on.
Hi, Hayden.
Oh, yeah. Hi. I'm from Easton. First of all, oysters are always going to be a part of our holiday parties.
Sounds
just
right.
Whether that's oysters Rockefeller or oysters on the half shell.
Nice.
But I have a cookie in particular that my mom always makes every Christmas. It's called Kringla, and it comes from Norway.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a sweet, cakey cookie. But it has, you put butter on it, a salted butter, and it's the sweetness of the bread of the cookie kind of combined with the salted butter. And it's just a really interesting cookie, and I've never really experienced anything like that.
That sounds
anywhere else.
Sounds so really good.
So it's a salted butter iced cookie?
Mm-hmm.
There's no icing. It's like kind of like a just a sweet kind of bread, and then it has kind of elements of nutmeg.
Okay. Sounds good.
You have me very intrigued.
Say the
now.
Name of it again.
Kringla.
Kringla.
All right. Very good. Yeah. I'm looking it up.
You get on the horn to Oslo immediately after the program.
Thank you for sharing, Hayden.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I love the idea of raw oysters. You know, one of our staff members always asks me to buy oysters for him for a case of oysters to take to his family for Thanksgiving. And I just love the idea. He's really good at shucking, too. So he stands there, gets a big container with ice in it, and just loads it up. It's keck. And he loads it up, and, he just shucks away. And it's so much. I've been to a party, actually, where he did that. I was impressed with his skills.
There's no way. He's the slowest eater I've ever met in my entire life.
But he's a fast shucker.
There's no way that he can eat the oysters as fast as he can shuck them.
He does it for other people. He's a very generous, nice man.
That makes him the perfect friend to have.
He is very sweet, and I love when he... And I think that's really cool, you know? It's nice, especially if he's a guest coming to your party, and he's willing to... You know, that's his contribution. That's pretty cool. That's pretty neat. I love it. So...
Yeah. Can I come to your party? I'm a great shucker.
Hey, it's a good quality.
There's no question. No question. We've got more emails here, sort of piling in at foremanwolf.org. Foremanwolf@wypr.org, I use my mouth when I talk. Growing up in Norfolk, Virginia, we always had a rib roast with Yorkshire pudding.
Mm.
The best. Merry Christmas. This is from Clifford.
Yum. Nice.
That's
Yorkshire pudding.
I definitely have not ever had a great Yorkshire pudding.
Well, he makes one, apparently.
If you make amazing Yorkshire pudding, I'd like to know all about it.
Yeah, I'd like a recipe for that, please.
I've only ever had them where they're sort of like droopy and heavy and disappointing. So this is one of our favorite emailers, Will in Waverly. You asked me about secret family recipes for the holidays. My mom makes an onion dip that is truly addictive.
Mm.
She started making it at Christmas, and now it's at every family gathering.
So I'm curious, does Will tell us what's in it?
Allow me to finish reading.
Oh, boy.
Cindy from Roland Park. It's simply equal parts chopped Vidalia onions, mayonnaise, and grated cheese, baked until it's bubbling and browned. That's...
Mayonnaise, chopped onions, and grated cheese?
Yeah.
Oh, does it say what kind of cheese?
No.
Okay.
It doesn't.
All right. Will, doesn't, could you I give think us
that's,
more details
that's up for your interpreter. Yeah, Will and Waverly, Cindy needs your help.
Thank you, Will. Cindy needs your help.
Oh, my God.
Cheddar. Yeah. Cheddar cheese. I bet that's what it is. Cheddar. Mm-hmm. That's my guess. Everybody uses that this time of the year. Okay,
if
so.
You say so.
So what are you going to have for your open party besides the trays of my champagne?
Open house?
Your open house.
We actually have an open house, so we have to actually have a plan.
Ooh, you better. Okay, let's hear it. I can't wait to hear. Are you doing the cooking? Or are you sharing?
Yeah.
No one's, okay.
I'll do the savory. And
Mario's
and
not coming?
No, that's I'll do the savory. I'll do the savory and
okay.
And Katie will do the sweet.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And she does, she'll do way too many pastries. And
well, that's always nice.
Use up way too much of the kitchen for way too long. Make me grumpy. That's the way it goes.
Hmm.
So with that in mind, I thought I would make, I like when people can pick up, take a plate and there are one or two little scenarios, you know? So like, even if you just have like simple salami like Norcino or salami calabrese,
mm-hmm.
and you have a garnish that makes sense for that. We have pickled peppers downstairs that are really nice, sweet and spicy. Those with some of the salami, maybe a little bit of an apple salad with that also. So you get, on your plate, you could get a little bit of all of those things. And maybe you're grabbing, maybe that's nice for a cocktail or for a lighter red wine like Barbera. So when I put together an open house, I always think about like, what are these moments? Because when you think about how you eat at those things, it's always, you grab something, you spend 8 minutes talking to this person and that person, and then you look to see who else is there.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize you've eaten your stuff and you need another little moment,
mm-hmm.
you know? I think probably gougere that you love to make.
Those are perfect. Yeah, gougere.
But gougere are fun to split and turn into little sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe gougere and easy to do in different ways. So maybe one with mortadella and like a little truffle mayo and a little chopped olive.
Sounds
would be
good.
Fun.
That's great.
And you can put a toothpick through it. The world loves everything with a toothpick through it, right? A little tiny spear. And do some with vegetables, whether it's grilled eggplant or you know, a pickled cauliflower and like spicy roasted eggplant or eggplant and peppers together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's sort of easy stuff to,
mm-hmm.
you know, you make your little batches of goodies and make your little, and that's done.
Yeah. Well, and I can jump in on the gougere thing. So gougere is those,
by the way, those are really, really fun to have a champagne. Those kinds of little
mm-hmm.
sandwiches.
So it's a Burgundian cheese pastry made with Gruyere cheese, and you make a pâte à choux recipe basically, and you add the Gruyere, and I always add a little bit of cayenne pepper to mine, black pepper, just to spice it up a tiny bit. And one of the things about making
it's not dominant.
Oh, no,
it's
no,
just
no,
like
no.
a little
no,
accent.
Just a tiny bit. But what you can also do with Gruyere is pipe into them. So if you use a star tip in a pastry bag, you can actually pipe from the bottom up and fill up the entire cavity, because that's what happens with a gougere, is that it creates a hole in the center as it bakes. So it's a perfect cavity for mushroom mousse or crab mousse or, you know, a cheese, another cheese in there, you know, anything. So it's a lot of fun. Gougeres are great little hors d'oeuvre thing. One of my other favorite things to do for hors d'oeuvres is to do past espresso cups of soup. And what's nice about that is the guests can drink it. They don't need a fork. They don't need a utensil. And then they can put the cup somewhere or, you know, someone's walking around taking the cups from people. But that's nice because you don't need a utensil.
So we are live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. And I have another email here from Oren in Essex. What do you think is a good dish to bring if you're a guest at a holiday party? I want something
good
that
question.
People will enjoy,
mm-hmm.
is easy to eat, and isn't a burden on the host, won't require using their oven or kitchen space.
Very thoughtful.
Which is smart.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You know, it's a little bit like if you're bringing flowers, it's much better to have them delivered, you know, delivered in a vase rather than all of a sudden
in advance of the event,
because, you know, here the host is standing there trying to do this party and all of a sudden, thankfully, they have all these flowers, but now you've got to find a vase.
And you're giving them something else to do.
Exactly. So he's very, or was it a man? Was that a man?
Oren in Essex.
Okay. Very thoughtful approach. You know, to me, I would either bring a cold dish that's ready to go. So maybe it's something already on a tray. So it's completely set up. So, you know, maybe your, you know, or idea of the cured meats and, Peter Keck just emailed us. He can't possibly be listening. So anyway,
why would he be awake?
I don't know. He isn't normally. Oh, he was off. Yeah, anyway. So So if you roll something like prosciutto or make flowers out of prosciutto or some other kind of cured meat or ham or something that you can already do all the work, have it on a tray, and then you just walk in the door with this tray that's ready to go and you whip the plastic wrap off, you're pretty cool. So something like that, maybe stuffed mushrooms. You know, you could always ask the host if you could bring something that you could just pop in the oven for a second, but I really do like the thoughtfulness of, so yeah. Maybe you could actually bring something that's already, you know, maybe you don't live that far away. You could bring something that's, you know, you make it hot, it's still warm, that's okay. Or you bring the pot, can I get on the stove for a second? But really, I like the whole idea of
it. Can I dominate your kitchen?
Yeah, no, don't do that. I already like the idea of it all trayed up and ready to go. So I guess we're looking for ideas for that. You're the hors d'oeuvre man. You're better at hors d'oeuvres than I am.
Well, I mean, bringing a tray of hors d'oeuvres is
great. That would be
great. I mean, that's...
Well, I know you like Belgian endive. That's always a good one.
Belgian endive with all sorts of goodies. I mean, if you want to do a vegetarian something, make a little goat cheese mousse, toast some walnuts... and crush them and dust the goat cheese mousse with the dusted walnuts and a little bit of chive or something like
Ooh, I have an idea. They could do ceviche. That's so good. And if you make it that morning, you know, obviously great fresh fish, if you're doing fish ceviche or scallop ceviche, you know, that's perfect because that's done. You know, you make it, it's you know, you're looking for the perfect marinade time. So time it so that when your party's, you know, you're leaving, it's ready. And then that can be in a beautiful bowl and, you know, that's done.
You just need tortillas.
And
you
super
can treat
cold.
It like a dip.
That would be super fun. Ceviche is a perfect thing. And that's not, you know, it can be, it doesn't have to be expensive. You can buy just as long as the fish is really fresh.
And you need to handle it appropriately temperature-wise.
And I do like the idea of the raw oysters, you know, so you could bring, you know, oysters that you just opened, put plastic wrap, you know.
You're
going
to just have to bring Peter
well.
With you as your date. Because he's a dandy shucker.
Okay, so I have to read Peter Keck's email. and he said, Peter Keck is the oyster guy. And yes, I will be requesting more oysters soon. That's the first thing he just said. Here's a different subject. I've been having fun making cultured butter, thinking of giving it as Christmas gifts. What are some cool flavors? Current batch is cultured with goat kefir, nice, bright, citrusy, earthy aspect to the richness. Wow, cultured butter. That's a super cool gift, Peter. You know, herbs, I would, you know, maybe hit it with rosemary. So you have a rosemary butter or I love lobster butter. So you could always add, that's kind of expensive, but you could add pieces of lobster to it and roll it. And that way, and roll it in plastic wrap like a compound butter. And that way the guests could just maybe even keep it in their freezer and pull it out when they're ready for it and slice it. You could certainly put smoked salmon in there. That might be fun. That would be another good trade-up hors d'oeuvre for someone to do. You know, maybe you do a little bit of creme fraiche inside, a little bit of chives and capers, and you could roll those and have a, you know, that would be another good trade-up hors d'oeuvre for somebody to take. But you can have fun with that, Peter. Like the cultured butter idea.
You're listening to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine live on WIPR. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. We have some emails to read. Wow. We have some emails to read when we return, and we have a chef's challenge coming up. One that's going to be extra tasty. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or send us an email. We have a couple to get to right now. 410-662-8780 is the number. ForemanWolf@WYPR.org is the email address. And we have a question from Dave in Baltimore. That's a good question. I have a winter party in which I mobilize nearly all the plates and bowls and all of the silverware, some of which inevitably needs to be washed and reused during the party. I think it adds class, but I am constantly being urged to use paper plates and plastic utensils. Do you have any opinions on plastic and paper at parties?
I think plastic and paper are fine, but I'm with him on trying to use the nice things. I mean, when else, honestly, in the end, often, when else do you use them? So are they just going to sit there and never get used? I mean, it is a lot of work. And I also have to redo my forks. I never have enough forks. Seems like that's the case. But I'm all for using your nice things, especially at the holidays when it's an important holiday. If it's a picnic outside, you know, that's totally different. At the 4th of July, who cares? Besides, use plastic and paper. But
besides being your nice things, I mean, you're not throwing something away. It's a lot more sustainable.
Well, that's a good point.
To use something and clean it and use it again.
Good point. I like that.
You know,
right on.
That just. Mm-hmm. Anyway, try to be mindful of that sort of business as well.
Sure.
And we have a recipe for scalloped oysters.
Oh, good.
From Bud and Debbie. An evolved recipe from Maryland's Way cookbook.
Okay.
Medium oven. Drain oysters, add equal quantity of white wine, reduce by half, add heavy cream to taste. Mm. Break saltine crackers into large pieces. Butter a casserole dish. Alternate layers of crackers and oysters. Dots of butter here and there can't hurt. Nappe each layer with sauce. Finish with sauce on top. Bake to bubbling. Brown with broiler or salamander.
Love it. That sounds good. I like that. That's interesting. So Maryland's Way. I actually have one of those cookbooks. That's awesome. Hmm.
Yeah.
It's such a traditional thing. I love it. And we have all these wonderful oysters. So celebrate the region.
Let's take a call from Ruth in Baltimore. Thank you, Bud. And Debbie.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How are you guys?
Good.
Great. So what you got?
Well, I'm not sure. When I was a kid, and I'm now 72, my grandmother used to make a wonderful dessert. I'm trying to remember the name. Please help me. It was called something like Glitch Cushion or something like that.
Sorry.
No?
Can you say the name again? I'm sorry.
I'll try it again. It was either Glitch or Clutch Cushion. It was a very sweet dish. It was kind of flat. I know she baked it, but that's all I remember.
Mm. I can't help you with that, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, what was her origin?
Well, we're African American, but my grandmother worked for a Jewish family in the Pikesville area. I don't know what their origin was.
Well, maybe someone will hear your call and answer that because I'm not sure.
That'd be great.
Okay, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Happy holidays, Ruth.
You too.
Thank you. Okay, so let's go to Patrick in Parkville. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi, Cindy and Tony. How are you guys?
Good, thank you.
So I was calling in with a question, and this has been bugging me for a while. It's not exactly a family recipe, but it was an ex-girlfriend's family recipe from way back in high school. And I think it was Italian. I'm not quite sure. But it was these little rolled-up crepes of some sort or some sort of little roll-up thing with Parmesan cheese in it and maybe some other cheeses. I'm not sure. But the grandmother, and she was about 95, she cooked these up every year only for the holidays and maybe New Year's and put them over an amazing chicken broth. And you ate it like a soup, but it had these little roll-up things in there. And for the life of me, I can't find a recipe for it.
And did you say that they were like sort of like crepes?
Yes, they did.
I think so, yeah.
There are a couple of different cultures in Europe that does something like that. In the southwest of Germany, you see that, where you'll see a great mushroom broth, and they'll make pancakes like right at that moment and cut them with scissors, right, and drop them in the broth and serve that. And in Tyrol, in the Alto Adige, on the Italian side and on the Austrian side, you'll see pancakes that get like a blue cheese rolled into them.
Oh.
And that,
wow.
And that, those will be sliced and served on top of a broth with an egg.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So there's a bunch of different, in that sort of soup of Middle Europe, there's a bunch of different versions of that.
And Tony, he's on the right track with the crepe, right? It is like a thin, thin pancake.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. You know, if you
it's not crisp.
Yeah, it's
crisp.
Tender.
It's very tender.
Right. So it should be tender.
Yeah,
so
it was very soft, and especially sitting in the broth, and just had fantastic flavor to it. The combination, it wasn't, now that you said kind of egg related, it definitely was more it had that consistency, but that very soft kind of a rolled up crepey type feel. Mm-hmm. Delicious though.
Yeah, and what you could do when you make the crepe, you could make it a little bit thicker than we would normally make a crepe, and that might give you that texture that you're looking for. Fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, maybe...
And definitely some Parmesan cheese, you think, in there?
Go
or
for it.
The blue cheese?
Or any cheese. Yeah, the blue, the Parm. You could do a goat cheese in there. You could
something
do a ricotta.
Sharp. Something that's sharp.
You know, with a little Reggiano in there. Definitely.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you, guys.
Very nice. Good idea. Thank you.
Let's take Jessica and Stevenson. Jessica, how are you?
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I was planning on making braised short ribs for supper tonight for guests. Mm-hmm. And I've read a million different versions of recipes.
What time?
6 o'clock.
Okay, I love short ribs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. My favorite.
But you probably just have enough time.
Yeah, you better. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm planning on starting now. But I guess I want to know the best method, for home cook to get really good restaurant quality short ribs.
Okay. So anytime you braise, you sear first. So you need a good size pan. If you you really need a saute pan. So that's a short sided pan. You could do it in a big pot, but it's got to have a big wide bottom on it. So what you want to do is get that almost to the smoking point. You put oil in, a neutral oil like corn oil, and get the pot hot, put the oil in, have the short ribs ready. I would, if they have any moisture on there, the problem with braising and searing things like, well, it's the searing aspect of the short rib, they pop. And just be prepared. I'd wear a long sleeve shirt that I don't care about because you're going to get fat on there and it'll protect your arms. If you have gloves, I would wear them because it really is it's a good way to burn yourself. So sear them. You want them nice and brown. If you put too many in the pan, if you overcrowd the pan. That's what a tall-sided pan does, too. It captures the steam in the pan. So if you have a short-sided pan, that steam escapes, and you're going to have a better time searing. So sear them, turn them over, sear them on the next side, check your fat. If you don't like it, you can do them in batches. And that's what we typically do because, we'll do 75 at a time. So you can take them out. If you don't like the fat, knock the fat out, put new fat in. Sometimes the fat is still fine. And then again, just hit them on a paper towel, put them in there and brown them. Then the rest of the braising process is you want to add mirepoix. So carrot, mm-hmm. celery, and onion in a small dice. If you want to eat it, make it consistent. If you're going to pull it out, it doesn't really matter. You can do a large dice and, so add carrot, celery, and onion. You could add leeks if you wanted to. You could add mushrooms at this point. Whatever flavor you're looking for out of your braise. Deglaze once you work the mirepoix in the fat that's in there. It's going to get good flavor. Then you're going to deglaze that pan. For short ribs, I would suggest red wine. That will bring up the fond off the bottom of the pan, creates flavor and color in your sauce. Now add your stock and a couple of bay leaves, four or five peppercorns, depending on how many short ribs you're braising, and then you're ready to go. You need to cover it. Cover the short ribs with the liquid, put a lid on it, turn it down. Once it comes up to a boil, turn it down to the lowest simmer. Boy, that's the fastest I can tell you how to braise something.
Mm-hmm. Well, but then it's going to cook for, 45 minutes, an hour?
Oh, maybe 2 hours. It depends
on
how big your short ribs
are.
Are
they on the bone? I guess I'm thinking they're not on the bone.
They are on
the
bone.
They're on the bone. They're like gigantic. It looks like I picked up something that the Flintstones would eat.
You're going to have 2 hours of braising.
This is 2 hours after.
And you braise them until they're tender. And then, so again, you decide if you want that sauce, if you're eating the sauce the way it is with the garnish, or if you're straining it, reducing it down a little bit, or adding a light roux to it to thicken it, and then adding whatever garnish you want.
Now, if I wanted to brown them on the stovetop, make the stock, and then transfer it to a pan and put it in the oven
to
braise the rest of the way, what temperature would you suggest?
I'd say 300.
Okay. What temperature internal should I aim for?
You want a very tender.
It's really texture.
You want a very low simmer. Low simmer. That's what you're looking for. I can't tell you temperature. Just you want them to cook very gently. Once they come up, you turn your heat. You should be turning your heat down on low. I never do mine in an oven, so you're gonna have to. I always do it on the stovetop. There's nothing wrong with doing it in an oven, but you're gonna have to check it. And you do not want that to be at a boil or even a quick simmer. You want it to just very gently cook. That's what makes them tender.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Did you talk about volume level of the liquid?
I told her to cover the short ribs with liquid. You should always keep them covered with liquid.
So you may end up having to add a little bit.
She may have to add some throughout the course of the cooking. Yeah. Yeah, but if she's got a lid on the pot, probably, you know. But keep an eye on it.
Now you've got me interested. What are you going to serve them with?
Is she there?
Oh,
did we lose you, Jessica? Okay.
I'm still here.
Oh, you are here. What are you going to serve them with?
What wine you would suggest? Should I go for a full-bodied Cabernet or something lighter?
I mean, something that you like, but you want something with some muscle. I mean, you're going to make something that has robust flavor. And, yeah, you want something with some muscle. You want, whether it's West Coast Cab or Barolo or a rich wine from Bordeaux, from Saint-Julien, Pauillac, you know, or Chateauneuf du Pape. I mean, that things with some muscle to them.
Something that you're going to want to drink with it later on anyway.
Oh, you're talking about the braising wine?
Yes.
Tony thinks you're talking about what you're going to serve it with. I use just a good bottle of wine.
The braising wine?
Yeah, just something good.
A bottle of Côte d'Aron.
Yeah.
A bottle of Côte d'Aron is easy.
We're not saying make it expensive, but you do want it to be good. I mean,
right.
Anything you put in there, your effort comes back to you. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome,
so much.
Jessica.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you.
That's we're going to have to save this chef's challenge.
Oh, because I want to talk to Ray.
Let's do a last call and talk to Ray about his cake recipe.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, this is Ray.
About
Email
her
Ray.
Cake recipe.
So you're on the air, Ray.
Hi. This is my Pennsylvania Dutch grandma's date nut cake recipe that I'm looking at. I haven't seen it for years and just pulled it out of an old recipe file. And I remember it as a child just being wonderful. It's whole dates, whole walnuts, sugar, flour, baking powder, salt, 4 whole eggs. And you put egg whites to all of those ingredients and bake it in a slow oven. And it's actually not like a cake. It's kind of like something that's just holding all of those whole nuts and dates together, almost like a candy/cake.
Sounds good.
It is. Fabulous. Mm-hmm.
That kind of a thing with a glass port wine is pretty darn fun.
Oh, my. Never thought of that. Mm. Oh, my. Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray. Sorry. That sounds great.
Thank you. Have a great holiday.
Yeah.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, we're going to have to do part two, I think, next week on this topic because there's
a
lot of interest and we still have some things to cover. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's Chef's Challenge for you to suffer under.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want to listen to this episode or any one of the other podcasts, please go to the WYPR website, WYPR.org. Look for the drop-down for Foreman Wolf, and there's a whole menu of podcasts that are there. If you want to follow us on social media.
You can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
I am the real Tony Foreman on Instagram.
Versus all the fake ones out there.
If you still have emails, please send them. Hey, there are a lot of pretenders.
Thanks for all your calls. That was fun. Go ahead,
Tony.
Yeah,
you can still send us emails. We'll bring them back next week. ForemanWolf at WIPR.org is the address. And again, thanks for all the calls and the emails.
Fun.
Thanks for listening.
And happy Sunday.